It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 7:06 on a Saturday morning, 72 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves of Georgia Gardener, here to help you be more successful in your garden, in your landscape, with your trees, with your shrubs, with your flowers. If you have a question about organic gardening, I'm here to answer it. All you got to do is call 404-872-0750. First in line this morning. Let's go ahead and get in here and get these calls done. George is first in line. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up?
I have some problems in an area foundation around the house where I have planted some dwarf Burkardii hollies. They died. I've planted some tea olives. They're dying. Uh-oh. And I've researched, and it sounds like it could be root rot. But in the same area, I have some rather large needle points.
Hmm. What are the symptoms? What symptoms do you see, George? Why do you think it's root rot?
I don't know what else it could be based upon my research, but the leaves are turning brown. Both times I did it last year, and I said, well, maybe it's a bad plant. So I planted another tea olive this year, and the same thing's happening there with the same plant, you know, the same type plant. And the leaves are just falling off, and it's only been a month and a half since I planted it.
Yeah. You know, root rot is associated with too much water in the soil. Is there a downspout or something nearby? The water's getting in their roots and soaking them
down?
Well,
it's an area that's, there's a retaining wall that retains dirt in a whole area around the foundation to the front of my house. And water has to go, you know, when it drains, it's got to go down through the dirt and down into the drain system and out. So there's a good chance that there is a lot of damp moisture there all the time.
That would be the first thing that I would just investigate, George. Also, I mentioned to the fellow earlier this morning, it's hard to get things established now. This time of year, you got to be really good about watering, particularly anything larger than 1 gallon. 3 gallon plants, 5 gallon plants, the root system on them just doesn't want to go out into the surrounding soil readily. And so you always have to make sure you're watering for at least the first 3 to 6 months, maybe, is right at the base of the shrub, right at the base of the tea olive, the base of the whatever you're planting, so that the root ball always stays moist, but it won't move very quickly into the surrounding soil. So it's one of the two, it sounds to me like, George. One, either the root rot came from too much water, from the water that's moving in as you described it, or it is just the root ball got dried out and the plant died from being too dry. Sounds to me.
Well, I think it's an issue of too much water there.
Okay.
My question is, I'm not going to be able to change that really, but so what kind of plant? I mean, I guess I could go in and plant needlepoint.
Yeah, I mean, if you know how it works, then do it. There are not that many plants that are that tolerant of lots of moisture around the roots. And one, Atea might be useful. How tall do you want the plant to be, George?
I'd like to get it about 4.5-5 feet tall.
Huh. Is it okay if it is deciduous and loses its leaves in the wintertime?
If that's the only thing I'm going to get, it'd be okay.
Investigate a plant that's usually referred to by its scientific name, I-T-E-A, Atea.
Okay.
Or I-T, I guess you were talking about sweet tea. I-T-E-A. Okay. It is tolerant of more moisture than some shrubs are, and that's a possibility. And also, I think I know I do on my website, a page that says plants for wet sites. And look and see if there are any shrubs there that might pique your interest as well. But
okay.
Atea is one to at least investigate.
That sounds great.
All right. George, it's great talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you so much.
We'll see you, man. We've got Todd online. Hey, Todd. Good morning.
Hey, Walter.
Hey, Todd.
Talk with you.
What you got?
Well, I was just curious. I've got some like wax leaf ligustrums that I wanted to take cuttings and root them in.
Sure. All right.
How big of a limb can I take? or
8 inches is about right for a ligustrum. 8 inches long. And have you ever done it before, Todd?
No, I haven't.
If you had subscribed to my newsletter, Todd, if you got my bi-weekly newsletter, you would see that the title article this week is How to Propagate Shrubs from Cuttings. Oh, my gosh, right there in front of me. But here's, I'll give you a brief overview, and then I'll let you go and look for the details on my website where I took this article from. But what I suggested for this particular article was getting a plastic shoebox is what I call them. They're bigger than that, with the plastic things you put underneath the bed to hold your sweaters and things during the wintertime. You know, you buy them from Target and folks like that.
Right.
Plastic containers. Get one about 6 or 8 inches deep and about a foot long and a foot wide, and fill it halfway full of potting soil. And then take 8-inch long cuttings from your wax leaf ligustrum, strip off all the leaves except 2, maybe 3 at the tip. And get a little bottle of rooting hormone from a Pike nursery. Get a little bottle that says a little powder that says rooting hormone there. And dip the ends of each cutting in the rooting hormone and stick them into your planting, your potting soil in the plastic box. It doesn't have to be drained, by the way. It needs to be moist potting soil, but not dry, not soggy, just moist. And once you've stuck 8 or 10 or 20 of them in there, depending on how big your box is, cover it with saran wrap, just plain, clear plastic kitchen saran wrap. And put it in a place that is outdoor, doesn't ever get direct sun, but is in sort of semi-shade, bright shade, something like that, under a dogwood tree or something.
Okay.
And within 6 or 7 weeks, those, every one of them will be rooted. They'll be rooted in that potting soil. You can put it on the leaves a little bit, or they may start a little bit of growth at the tip of the cuttings. And then you got a bunch of wax leaf ligustrums to plant.
Oh, there you go.
There
Thanks.
You go. If you'll go on my website and type one word, propagate, propagate, you'll see pictures and maybe a couple of other ways of propagating shrubs. But I think you can do it, Todd. It's not hard. Ligustrum is an easy plant to make more of.
Well, I appreciate it. I'll get on the website.
All right.
And thank
you can do it with azaleas, do it with bunches, all the broadleaves, sort of gardenias, all the things that have broadleaves on, the same method of using a shoebox, a plastic box, and putting saran wrap over the top. Generally, it works for all of them.
Great.
All right.
Great.
Good
I'll
luck with it,
that.
Todd. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Our number is 404-872-0750. 404-872-0750. The same numbers that Billy dialed just a few minutes ago, and now he's on the air. Billy, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Billy.
I ain't never called. I'm a first-time caller.
Isn't it easy? You just dial the numbers, and there we are, and you talk to me on the phone, just the same as talking to your mother or anybody else.
Well, what I've got, instead of having blossom end rot, I got the whole tomatoes rotting.
Go on.
Black. What? You know, it turns black.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it doesn't... So you obviously know already what blossom end rot looks like. It's on the blossom end. It turns black, but usually
but
stays there at the blossom end. But this one, where does it start from then, Billy? From the side or the top, or where does the blackness start?
Really, I don't know where it starts, because when I see them, it done covered the whole tomato up. I've never had it. I've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
And I never, that's one reason I'm calling you. I never had this problem at all. And it ain't just one plant. And see, I took your advice, and instead of planting all one variety of tomatoes, I went to different varieties. Every 5 or 6 plants, I've got different ones in there.
That was smart.
And it's not just one variety. It's another variety, too.
Billy, what am I going to say here? I don't have a great thought of what's going on there. The only couple of things I can think of. One is, if you had a bunch of stink bugs, but it's early in the season to have stink bugs, it will make pierced, they'll put holes in the side of fruit, and it'll be all over the fruit if you have a bunch of stink bugs.
It'll
infect them.
Well, I went ahead and poisoned them, but I didn't see no stink bugs.
Yeah, as I say, it's early June. It should be out in 1st of July, but not in June quite, I think.
Well, I got them on the squash. White squash, the stink bugs.
Yeah.
But I didn't even never know they went to tomatoes.
You may have squash bugs. They look like stink bugs, sort of, but they get on squash more than tomatoes.
Well, I didn't see nothing on the tomatoes at all. I just went ahead and poisoned them anyway.
Yeah. Billy, I don't have a great answer for you. The only other thing that's possible is a disease called late blight. But again, this is not late in the season. Late blight comes in August, September sometime. But it's not now the time for late blight to occur. Early blight, you tell me you had spots on the leaves. You didn't tell me that. Blossom end rot is on the blossom end, but not on the whole fruit.
Right.
Man, oh man, you know, Billy, what county do you live in?
I live in Mapleton.
So that'd be Cobb County, right?
Right, yeah.
Call the Cobb County Extension office on Monday morning and ask to speak to a master gardener and see if anybody there has an idea on what's going on, because I do not.
Okay.
The number, if you need the number, I'll tell you right now, it's easy to remember. Just dial 1-800-ASK-UGA and the number 1. ASK-UGA-1, and it'll connect you immediately to the Cobb County Master Gardeners.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate it, Walter.
If you find out an answer, Billy, I'd appreciate it if you'd call back. That'll be your second time calling me, and now that we're friends, you can call me all you want to.
Okay.
All right, man.
I appreciate it.
Sure, we'll see you soon.
All right, bye.
404-872-0750 is the number on Lawn and Garden. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellis weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
And a quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. Today and tomorrow, about the same weather. 30% chance of rain both days. High of 90 today, low of 70 overnight. Tomorrow, high of 90 again and low of 72 overnight. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Our phone number is 404-872-0750. Gary is the first in line. Hi, Gary. Good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help?
I'd like to know how to get rid of wild violets in my fescue lawn.
Ooh, this is not hard at all.
If you say, really?
Yeah, this is great news.
Okay.
I say that, and then I'm second thinking myself and thinking, now, wait a second. What did I read the other day about the particular ingredient I'm about to? I better be safe for you, Gary. I have another way of doing it, more than the one I was thinking about at first. I have used two products. Both of them did great. One is the Bonide Weed Beater Ultra that I got from Pike. The other was the Bayer season-long weed control. I used one on the front yard, one on the backyard, just to see the comparison between the two. Both of them killed violets out of fescue and a little bit out of St. Augustine perfectly. It was remarkable.
Okay, Weed Beater by Bonide and Bayer what,
Bayer season-long weed control.
Season-long weed control.
I'm pretty sure that the or the Weed Be Gone Max has about the same ingredients in it. I just didn't use it myself, but the Weed Be Gone Max at Ortho Cells is probably about the same. But I have used the other two, so I know what they do. But bottom line, all I did, Gary, was they were both in hose-end sprayers. So I connected to my garden hose, and I back over it. You don't want to walk through what you spray, so you go backwards over the lawn. And so I backed over the patch that had the violets in it, and within 3 days, I'm guessing, the violets were yellow. I mean, they're yellow on top. You can see they're sort of curling up a little bit. And within about 10 to 15, I'm guessing, Gary, they were wilted and down on the ground, and that was that. End of story.
Great. Bonide Weed Beater or Bear Season, seasonal lawn.
Bonide. Bonide. Yep.
Thank you so much.
Have fun with it, Gary. Let me know if it doesn't work.
All right.
I believe it will. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
In the next half hour, Joan wants to know about how to spray chemicals on weeds to kill them. I think I just answered Joan's question right there. Kathy wants to know how to cut a dead limb off a tree without messing it up. Teresa wants to know how to kill bamboo. Think about that for a minute. And Jeff wants to know how to get blue starburst grass growing within and how to get rid of that blue grass growing in it. All right, we'll figure that out all together. A number, of course, on the radio show is 404-872-0750. And don't forget, tomorrow is Sunday, where you can pick up your Sunday Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I love reading my Sunday Atlanta Journal-Constitution because, number one, they have the comics. Number two, they have great coverage and summaries of what they covered during the week. And boy, oh boy, there's lots of stuff to cover during the week because the governor's race is heating up. And right now, Mr. Cagle and Mr. Kemp have lots of things that they want to say about each other. And, of course, Stacey Abrams has things he wants to tell at each of them. So the Sunday afternoon that I've been reading this Saturday, the Sunday Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is lots of fun. You can pick up yours, of course, at many grocery stores and other places, or you can subscribe at AJC.com. Right now it's 728 at News Talk WSB. More Lawn and Garden right after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
7:35 on a Saturday morning, 72 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden, my friends. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia gardener, here to help you be more successful in your landscape. And how do you be more successful? Well, you give me a call, 404-872-0750. I think we made a mistake in the last half hour and cut Joan off, and we didn't mean to do that, but Joan's question was pretty simple. She said, how long do you have to wait after you put a weed killer on your lawn before you can let your pets out there, before you plant things and do stuff like that? And frankly, it depends on the product. It's not one rule that fits everything. So some of the products disappear within 4 or 5 days. Roundup, for instance, says on the label you can plant seeds in an area where you've used Roundup within, I think, 7 days in most situations. But for things like the Bonide and the other weed control things I mentioned to the fellow before that, many times it's 2 weeks to 30 days before you can plant seeds. Before you put pets or children on the lawn, usually the warning is to let the product dry on the leaves before you let a pet or a child go out there. Read the label. That's always the best advice. Read the label of the product and do whatever the label says for, and it'll have to say on the label how long before people can be on the lawn or how long it takes before you can plant seeds or other plants there. 404-872-0750 is my number. We got Teresa on the line. Hey, Teresa, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Walter. How are you?
I'm well. How can I help?
Okay, so my neighbor planted bamboo, yeah, and it is now taking over my area, and I want to know how to get rid of it easily.
Ooh, that last word, Teresa.
Not easy. Erase
that last word, because it is not easy. It's hard.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
And how long have you been living in the house, Teresa?
24 years.
It's not going to take 24 years to get rid of the bamboo.
The
it will take at least two. At least two.
Okay.
So nothing is 100% going to get rid of it tomorrow, other than a bulldozer. And literally some people use that. Some people get a mm-hmm. backhoe or somebody with heavy machinery and dig the bamboo out. And that is, you know, pretty quick. But if you're doing it by hand, the only thing that you can do is simply starve it to death. And you starve it to death by either killing, or both of these really, by killing the above ground foliage as often, as regularly as you possibly can for 2 years. And most of the time, that is long enough to kill the roots that are underground. So you mm-hmm. kill the above-ground foliage by either stomping on it, chopping it with a machete, spraying it with Roundup, doing whatever you have to do to get no greenery above ground, because that greenery, mm-hmm. of course, feeds the roots. And if you starve the roots, you have accomplished what you want. So you can, if you, some people say pouring a little bit of Roundup down into the culm after you've chopped with a machete works for them a little bit better than just mm-hmm. chopping it or spraying the leaves. But I can't testify either one that works really, really better than the other. But I do know it's going to take you a couple of years to get it all done.
Okay.
What are you going to do once?
Killed green.
Yeah. What are you going to do once yours is dead, but theirs on the other side of the property line is still alive? What are you going to do then?
That's a good question. What am I going to do?
Sometime during this 2 years, we're going to contemplate putting a below ground barrier in place. And barriers can be made out of anything that's thick enough that it won't crack and it won't deteriorate underground. There are products that are sold for doing this. If you look online and just say bamboo barrier in Google, and you'll find two or three people, one person over in Alabama, I think, that has a big firm that mostly all they do is sell bamboo barriers or rubber material. And you dig a trench. I think most people rent a trencher, one of those machines you can go to the rental store and rent. And you get a ditch witch out there and dig a trench about 2 feet deep, and then push this this liner, this rubber stuff, down into the ground 2 feet deep with a few inches above ground. And that keeps the roots, the rhizomes, from coming from the other property onto yours. So the barrier then just keeps the roots and the rhizomes from getting back into place in your property and making a mess out of your place.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. I certainly appreciate it.
Just 2 years, Teresa. It could be worse. Could be 3 or 4 or 5, but 2 years I think will do it.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks for calling. We've got now Kathy on the line. Hey, Kathy. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hi. So why do you have to cut a dead limb off? What's going on there with the tree?
Well, it's dead.
All right. That's a good enough answer for me.
The limb is. And so I just want to get rid of it because I don't want it bothering the tree, and it looks kind of silly out there. So
how big is the limb, Kathy? Is it big as your wrist, big as your thumb, big as your leg? How big?
A little bit bigger than my wrist.
All right. And how far off the ground?
Probably about a foot off the ground.
Oh, this will be easy then. You don't have to be on a ladder or anything like that, right?
No, but it's an Okami cherry tree.
Uh-huh.
So I know I've cut off limbs on an oak tree before where I know you have to find that collar because you don't want to...
Ooh, Kathy, you just already ruined my surprise for you. That's exactly right. Good for you.
Well, I listen to you, so...
Good.
I know you don't want to cut it out too far from that because then I guess it can rot the tree.
Exactly right.
And I also know you don't want to cut it, you don't want to cut that off either because that's bad for the tree too. Right.
What tool do you use to do the cutting, Kathy?
A pole saw.
Okay. Sounds good. Well,
and I know that you have to, make a cut, underneath and then cut from the top so you don't, strip bark all down the side of the tree.
Well, now, Kathy, I have a question for you. Why are you calling me? Because you told everything that I was going to tell you about how to cut a dead limb off a tree. So,
because it's an Okami cherry tree.
Yeah.
And when I make this cut, it's basically going to be, parallel to the ground instead of, on an oak tree. It's perpendicular. Is that bad?
No, I don't think so at all. But let me summarize for our listeners, Kathy. Stop just a minute. Let me summarize for our listeners what you have said that I want to make sure is clear. First thing, I think that how to cut the limb off at the beginning, Kathy noted you cut up from the bottom, about a foot away from the trunk of the tree is fine. Cut up from the bottom, about halfway through the limb, and then down from the top. And what happens then is the limb sort of snaps off. And in Kathy's case, the limb is only a foot off the ground, so no big deal. But if you have a larger limb or one that's a little higher up, again, up from the bottom, then down from the top, and the limb snaps off, leaving about a foot-long stub. Now, the stub, Kathy, again, pointed out that you want to make your cut just outside the collar. If you look where the limb joins the trunk of a tree, whether it's a cherry or an oak or a pine or anything else, there's a collar there where the limb comes out of the trunk. Your cut should be just on the outside of that collar, just to leave the collar on the tree, because that's where the fastest growing cells are. Those are the cells that will cover over the wound, protect the tree from any infections. And so you make your cut just outside of the collar, and it swells over it. You don't leave a stub. Kathy said that. You don't leave a stub because the stub will simply rot. It won't have a collar because the stub is in place, and it'll lead to water getting into the trunk of the tree and a hollow trunk, and that's not what we want either. So up and down for our cuts, make sure you cut outside the collar. Number two, don't leave a stub. Number three, we're home free. Kathy, what else can you add to that?
Nothing.
You're doing great then. It should not hurt the Okami cherry at all. The collar, of course, is there. And I think everything will be fine a few years from now. It'll be all sealed up and tight. Nothing to
it.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck with it, Kathy. Thanks so much for calling this morning.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you soon. 404-872-0750. The number was just a minute ago that Jeff dialed, and here he is on the air. Hey, Jeff. Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Walter. How are you?
Doing fine, Jeff. What's up?
Well, first of all, I got to say, I met your sister.
Oh,
sweet,
man.
Sweet lady.
I have two, Jeff, but both of them are sweet, but which one is the sweetest? Which one did you
Okay, I can't remember. I can't remember her first name. It was a business-related meeting, but she lives in a subdivision with the old male arrows from the 20s when they had the arrows in concrete with a light tower that would guide the mail planes, the biplanes, from Atlanta to Chicago.
Wow.
Red
My
Top.
Sister said
That's
that?
In Red Top.
Okay. All right. So, Jeff, what do we want to do this morning?
Okay. So, I've got the blue, I guess they're called blue starburst ground covering. It's a green sort of plant covering the ground. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Not quite yet, but keep going. Describe more.
It blooms into little blue flowers, but my wife planted them as, and then of course she put sort of the faux brick lining around it.
Got it.
Between this ground covering and Bermuda grass. And slowly, the grass penetrated through, and you got these long little stalks of Bermuda sticking out.
Yeah.
And you mentioned to the other caller about an underground barrier, which probably should have happened.
Yeah.
Didn't. So I don't know what to do with this.
The bluegrass, I've forgotten now the name of it. I have some myself, and I've forgotten the name of it because I've lost the label several years ago, and so it's there it is. It blooms blue in the spring, pretty little ground cover grass. Getting the Bermuda out is going to be tough, Jeff.
So I
think it's going to be a project. How big is the area that you're trying to get the Bermuda out from?
It's about maybe 4 feet from the house to the faux brick.
Yeah, and so that's 4 feet by how wide, how long is it?
I don't know, maybe about 20 feet long, ooh, you know, the side of the house.
Is there a possibility, just asking, is this blue, this is not monkey grass, the one that has the blue spikes or not?
No, it's your screener didn't hear me right. I didn't say blue grass.
Okay.
But I said, like, the flowers are blue, the covering is green.
Okay.
It's a green covering on the ground.
So what are we going to do to get the Bermuda grass out of it? I mean, that's the real question to me is how do you get the Bermuda grass out? And that's going to be tough because there are not so many things that you could spray that are smart enough to tell the difference between your nice ground cover and the Bermuda grass. They both look like a weed to the spray, and the spray kills everything. Look online. All right, here's what I want you to do, Jeff. Do a little homework here because I don't think you'll see much of this Bermuda grass killer on the shelf here in Atlanta. Maybe Bayer used to make one called Bermuda Grass Killer. I think that was the name of it, Bermuda Grass Killer. And then they took it off the market and it was sold for a few weeks and months after that. Look online for Bermuda Grass Killer. It works specifically on Bermuda grass. See if the label on it says can also be used on X, Y, and Z ground covers. I don't think it will, but read the label. That's what the law is for, to tell you what it does and doesn't do. And if it does not want to make the Bermuda grass come out of your ground cover, then you and your wife are going to have several hours of companionship together. And you're going to be out there digging the bed up and taking the Bermuda grass out by hand and planting, replanting the ground cover, and then making an underground barrier so that the Bermuda grass can't get back in there.
How deep should the barrier be?
For Bermuda grass, not very deep. It only goes down about 6 to 8 inches. And frankly, if you wanted to, Jeff, you could go to the hardware store and get some aluminum flashing. You know what aluminum flashing is? It comes in a roll. They use it on roofs to flash where chimneys and all come out. Aluminum flashing would be plenty wide enough. And just dig, again, this could be with a shovel, dig a trench about 6 or 8 inches deep, put the flashing in the trench. The roots will not be able to penetrate through it. Leave about an inch of the flashing above ground so they can't go over the top either. Remembering, too, that Bermuda grass can be spread by seed, so you got to keep an eye out on the ground cover to make sure the seeded Bermuda grass doesn't get in there and get started either.
Oh, great.
But I think that the digging it out by hand is probably going to be what you end up doing.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Look online. See if the Bermuda grass killer is online or still for sale. It might be able to be helpful for the projects that you have. It's 7:48 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need. In many ways,
someday. And a quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. Today and tomorrow about the same. Today the high 90 degrees, overnight low 70. Pretty much a 30% chance of rain both days. Tomorrow 90 and 72 overnight. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Crystal Wheeler, let us give away the weekend prize pack, a family four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Stripers at Cool Ray Field. You can go anytime during the regular season. These tickets are good anytime during the regular season. Crystal, what caller will win?
Two.
Caller number two to 404-741-0750. Second caller, 404-741-0750, gets to go see the Gwinnett Stripers anytime during the season. Ruby is on the line with a question about her moss and how to control it. Hey, Ruby, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Walter.
How can I help?
So glad to talk to you. I have had a service cut in my grass for the last, I will say, 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when you have people cutting around, you really do not notice things changing much,
sure.
Especially if they stay in green. I have my yard is about, 13,000 square feet or so.
Uh-huh.
In the front, we are doing fine. But in the back and on the side, even though it's sunny, I have tons of moss growing.
Mm-hmm. What kind of grasses are you growing in the lawn?
Fescue. I have fescue.
Okay. I would say if you have plenty, do you have plenty of sun in the area where the moss you say is growing?
Yes, that's true. And it's still
okay.
growing.
I think what we're going to do then is two things. Number one, make sure there's not any free water. It's been rainy this spring, I know, but make sure that if you have a downspout from a gutter, that it's not just spreading water over that area where the moss is, because moss obviously loves moist soil. So if the soil stays moist for a long time during the spring, then that's why the moss is there, and fescue doesn't like wet soil, so fescue thins out and the moss comes on. But an easy way that I found to control moss in the lawn for at least a short term, while the fescue is getting reestablished there once the moss is gone, is a product called Moss Out, M-O-S-S-O-U-T, Moss Out. And the easiest way to apply it is with a hose-in sprayer. I've seen it both as granules as hose-in liquid sprayer.
Okay.
I like the hose-in thing a lot better. So you just connect it to your garden hose and back over the area with spraying the stuff on there.
Sure.
And within about about 3 days later, Ruby, the moss will turn black, and it'll pretty much wash away, dry up, and go away for you then. And then you don't have any moss, and hopefully the fescue has a chance to grow and the fescue takes over. So Moss Out is a product called ferric sulfate, I think is the active ingredient in it, and I think it'll do a good job for you. Look for it at all the hardware stores and garden centers. I believe that most of them have it for
now,
you.
Now, do you suggest I do this now or wait until it's closer to
September?
I would do it now.
I think I'd do it now and let the fescue get started during the summertime. I think it would do fine to do it now. It's 7:58 at News Talk WSB. Back to more lawn and garden after news.